With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You are listening to Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
Hey, what's going on? It's Metal Shop doing a little at-home podcasting right now. Speaking with someone all the way in Germany, Robin Stapps from The Ocean Collective. They have a new album, Phanerozoic, Paleozoic. Or, I'm sorry, that was the last one, but the new one is Phanerozoic 2, Mesozoic, Cenozoic, coming out September 25th on Metal Blade Records. Highly anticipated album. Robin, how are you doing today, man? What time is it right now where you are?
Pretty good, man. It's about 6:30 in the evening here. I'm in Spain, actually, not in Germany right now. I managed to escape from Berlin when flights opened again last week, actually. So yeah. Having a little off time here. Doing great.
Nice, man. Well, obviously 2020 has been a hell of a strange year. Honestly, the strangest I've ever been alive to see, and we're still, you know.
Yeah.
But we got to keep going on, you know, with it and everything. You guys have a new record coming out. But personally, these last few months, obviously these last few months have been crazy. How have you been? How have you been staying sane? How you been staying safe? What have you been up to?
Well, I was stuck in Berlin, basically, where I live. And to be honest, it really wasn't the worst time. Mm-hmm. I had lots of off time to do other things that I otherwise would have never found the time to do, I guess, such as working on a photo book, 130 pages photo book documenting our tours of 2019 on the first part of the Phanerozoic record. That took a lot of time, and it turned out to be a beautiful project, but it was, it would have been completely impossible if it wasn't for the total halt to which we came, you know, when all of this happened. So I'm trying to see it positive, man. Like, there's nothing we can do about it anyways. Obviously, we had a whole bunch of it canceled. Mm-hmm. We had a South America tour booked for May that we had to cancel, but luckily there was no flights booked yet, so we could just postpone it without, you know, any costs to us.
Yeah.
And lots of summer festivals, Wacken and a festival in Russia, and like a whole lot of stuff was canceled. But I think we just managed to reset our minds pretty quickly on the fact that this is something we can't do anything about, and to, you know, look for other opportunities and try to make the best out of it. And also, I have to say that it kind of came at the right time, because our bass player has has a weird disease on his fingers called psoriasis. It's a skin disease, so he hasn't been able to touch his instrument for like a couple months, actually. And our vocalist just had surgery to his ear. So if it wasn't for COVID-19, I think we would have been kind of knocked out anyway. So it somehow just really came at the right time for us, I guess.
Definitely, man. Yeah, I have psoriasis too. It's kind of a, it can be, it can range from just kind of a cosmetic thing to actually pretty debilitating. So it sounds like,
so, it was pretty bad for him. Like his you know, the tips of his fingers were getting loose and stuff. And it's pretty gross.
Damn.
So yeah, it's, he wouldn't have been able to play with us, I guess.
So, okay. So, yeah. So I kind of wanted to ask this question that's, it's, just follow along with me for a second if you can. So we're all in this weird time frame where if we want to stay connected, we want to read the news. Obviously, sometimes it can be a bit depressing or sad. if you have a day where there's a lot of negativity or bad news, Robin, what is an album that you can go back to time and time again that can refocus you? Is there one you can get lost in? The one that can kind of just uplift you, change your mood?
Well, difficult to name one. There is lots of records that I always keep going back to, obviously, but it really depends on my mood.
Okay.
I wouldn't be able to say from the top of my head, there's this one record that I always listen to when I feel down. It's usually not like that. I listen to a lot of different tastes, different styles of music. I have a very diverse taste.
Okay.
Anything from electronic music to metal and post-rock and jazz and instrumental music and fusion and like there's literally everything in it, and it kind of depends. If it's more like a melancholic vibe that makes me want to listen to something old that I used to listen to when I was growing up, or something more contemporary that I just find really uplifting because it's new and fresh, and you know, so it really depends. I would have to think more about that.
Fair enough, man. Put you on the spot, anyways. So let's talk about the album, though. So obviously, highly anticipated. You guys have such you might not be the biggest band in the world, but for the fans that love you guys, and you guys are a pretty damn big metal band, but I mean, not just metal band, but prog and rock and everything, but you guys are awesome. But the thing that blows my mind is the dedication of your fans and the amount of just like anticipation for this record. So the record's called Phanerozoic 2 Mesozoic Cenozoic. Hope I got that right. Coming out September 25th.
Metal pronounceable, right?
Yeah, exactly. September 25th.
Mission accomplished.
Metal Blade Records. So we're not going to be spoiling anything here, but what can you tell us about the album? Can you give us a couple, you know, things that you're looking forward to about with the release?
Well, first of all, I agree with you, what you just said. We're very lucky to have very dedicated fans that really support us for a lot of them for a long time already. I mean, the band's been around for almost 20 years. And by this time now, we really have this tribe of people that follow us and buy everything we release on vinyl. And it's usually pretty crazy packagings that come at a price. But we know we can do that because our fans will buy it. And we're incredibly thankful for that. So it's really, really great. And that allows us, obviously, to do cool stuff, you know, and to do to realize projects which otherwise would just be too risky or too costly. Like for the Phanerozoic Records, we did a box set that is basically a wooden box that comes with a branded like engraving on the front and like four records in it, the two Phanerozoic records and their instrumental versions. So it's a total of like six or seven vinyl records.
Holy crap.
And then an engraved slate rock plate and actually authentic prehistoric fossils. There's like a trilobite that came with a box set that's 350 million years old and things like that. Are not cheap. They're very time consuming to realize, and we wouldn't be able to do that if our fans weren't craving for that type of stuff and if they weren't willing to spend money on that. So we are very, very thankful for that. And yeah, that's really great. And well, the record, Phanerozoic 2 is obviously continuing where Phanerozoic 1 left off.
Yeah.
Phanerozoic is the time that we currently live in.
Mm-hmm.
It's a geological aeon, and it started 540 million years ago and carries on until the present tense. So
okay.
We're kind of like living at the end of the Phanerozoic. And well, the second part, Mesozoic, Cenozoic, is focusing on these subordinate eras. What happened at the Mesozoic, I guess a lot of people are aware, is that some 65 million years ago, this giant asteroid collided with Earth and wiped out the dinos and pretty much everything else on Earth.
Yeah.
And this is kind of like the red thread that goes through this record. So it's kind of a dinosaur record, but not really, because we're imagining that scenario taken to the human level, to our time, and imagining this planetary collision, you know, on a large scale. And if you do that, you arrive at Lars von Trier's Melancholia movie, which is kind of like the backbone of the lyrics. The idea that there's, something falling from the sky that will wipe out humanity and life on Earth as a whole, and how we deal as individuals with that prospect. That's pretty much what's at the heart of this record.
Have you ever thought about writing like a novel with all of these themes?
I have actually, but it's not that I really have considered it. Like, music has just been taking so much of my time the last couple of years, and it's not just the band, but also the record label that I run. It hasn't really left me much resources to think about that, but I would be very interested to do that. It's maybe just something I will start looking into at a later stage in my life.
Fair enough. So with this Phanerozoic, I don't even know how to say it. Like with the whole theme with the two albums. What made you guys decide to do two different albums linked together as opposed to just one really really long double or triple album?
We didn't want to do that this time around. We've kind of done that before. We're kind of like we've embraced the idea of the double record for a long time. Yeah. Affliction and Aeolian that came out in 2005-2006 was a double album. Precambrian was that as well.
Yeah.
It was actually released as one record, but it was two discs and like two separate records. And then Heliocentric and Anthropocentric were released separately in 2010, but also belong together. So we've kind of always done that, and I don't know why this dichotomy always has been like part of our release plan. I guess it's because the material I write is quite diverse, and I also write a lot. So by the time we're able to enter the studio, there's usually more material written than what would fit on a single slab of vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question is, how do you separate it? And I usually just try to group it together in groups of songs that kind of make sense to be on the same record and to fit together. I don't want the records to be too challenging or too annoying in terms of like going through too many different styles or moods or whatever. It has to have a sort of coherence and consistency, and that's why I usually try to group songs that to me at least belong together on one record. And that's the same that we did here as well.
Mm-hmm.
The first part of the record is quite streamlined. It's some songs of similar tempos, and there's this certain vibe that just goes through the record from the beginning to the end. And those tracks was kind of clear to me from the beginning that they would need to be together. They were also written around the same time. And,
yeah.
They were kind of like in a unity, that like an entity that belonged together. The second part was initially just the leftovers. They were the more eclectic, more experimental songs that didn't fit on the first record.
Yeah.
But I'm really happy to say that they developed, and that second record developed an identity of its own. As we were going through the process of working out these tracks and putting them together.
Yeah.
And it's quite a journey. Like it starts in one place and concludes in a totally different place, and you wouldn't necessarily be able to anticipate that when you start listening to the beginning of the record, I think. But that's something that just happened across the process. And are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I'm just taking it all in, dude.
That happened throughout the process.
Well, I'm stoked to take it all in, speaking of, and listen to it. Obviously, we're talking about the record that's coming out September 25th on Metal Blade Records. We were mentioning you guys have a dedicated fan base, so we're all stoked to hear this. And I wanted to go back a little bit, and Robin Stapps is who I'm speaking with from The Ocean, in case you're just tuning in. We weren't all born with Judas Priest t-shirts. What was the first album that you ever purchased with your own money, whether it be a CD, a tape, vinyl? What was the first album that you purchased with your own money, dude?
Pretty sure that was Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction.
Nice.
That was kind of like the first record that got me into guitar music.
Yeah.
When I was maybe like 10 or 11 years old.
Okay.
And I bought that record on tape, actually. That was the big thing back then.
All right. And then so that inspired you, like listening to Slash, to pick up an instrument yourself?
To be honest, it was a little bit before I actually started playing guitar, but it was my first big love of rock and roll and like really getting into a band to a degree where I would know all the lyrics by heart, and I got to see them as well. And I think it was like 91 or something like that on the Use Your Illusion tour. And that was my first big love of rock and roll. And then other things happened and I started listening to heavier stuff, and then eventually also got into like the early 90s hardcore scene, bands like Sick of It All, and
yeah
and Biohazard and, like, you know, all the New York stuff, and then Straight Edge Hardcore happened, and then around that time, and like, must have been like 92 or 93 is when I really started picking up an instrument and learning guitar, and just tried figuring out riffs of my favorite bands, and played in a hardcore cover band, and we were playing like Gorilla Biscuits and Side by Side songs and stuff like that.
Wow, so huge!
That was my initial picking up an instrument and starting to play music, and then it just took off from there.
Dude, listening to your music, I would have never guessed that you were an old hardcore kid. I love hardcore.
Oh, yeah.
I love hardcore too. I'm looking at a rack of cassette tapes with like Sick of It All and Undertow and Unbroken and stuff like that.
Man, I saw all these bands live. Sick of It All in 93 or 94 was my first hardcore show. Sick of It All with Strife. And then Unbroken must have come over to Europe around the same time. And yeah, that was pretty sick. And I saw Undertow as well. They toured with Ignite, I think.
So yeah, they did. That was their only European tour. Yep.
Exactly.
let's jump into that real quick. What are like four or five like essential hardcore records when you think to that time in your life? Like four or five just like essentials that you would give to someone to like, here's your starter pack.
Well, from the top of my head, we already spoke about Unbroken. Life, Love, Regret was definitely one of those records for me. Let's say, you know, I really suck with like naming records, like you can tell.
Okay, fair enough.
Sorry, the second time that you asked me this type of question, like the first one was what type of record do you go back to when you're sad. Honestly, I don't know, it really depends on my mood, but I should look at my collection. I was into there was a band from Sweden called Abinanda that I was really, really into.
Okay.
As I said already, a lot of New York stuff. Sick of It All, Just Look Around would be one of those records. I was really into Judge and Side by Side and this type of stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of Swedish stuff. Refuse, The Shape of Punk to Come. Obviously, that was 1998, but that was kind of like a borderline hardcore record. There was a little bit more than that.
Totally.
And Breach, another Swedish band, released a record called Venom. Also must have been like 97 or something like that. That was a groundbreaking record for me that I really, really loved. And lots of other stuff.
That's cool.
Groundwork I was really into.
And
some West Coast stuff as well, like I think Undertow were from Seattle or something like that.
Yes, they were. And
there was like lots of cool bands coming from that side of the country as well.
Yeah,
Strain, remember that band?
Oh, absolutely, man. Strain from Vancouver, Trial from Seattle.
From Vancouver, exactly. Yeah.
So
some California stuff, some of the more posy core stuff like Uniform Choice and Ignite, you know, I was also into that.
Nice, dude. Interesting. I would have never guessed, but that's awesome to hear. And one thing that I've always heard when listening to like podcasts with hardcore musicians or just reading, you know, Maximum Rock and Roll or these things, talking about touring Germany, touring Europe, they always talk about how cool it is to play in these like kind of punk commune sort of squats. Is that, did you guys, have you ever played those kind of venues and what's the, like history there? Like how long have these kind of like squats and punk houses and kind of communal living spaces been around? Do you know?
Well, they've mostly disappeared now. Speaking about Berlin, I moved to Berlin in 99 or 2000, I think. And by that time, there was heaps of squats and lots of gigs happening there as well. And it was also just a great, cheap opportunity where you could get food for like €1 for a full meal or something.
Sure.
You know, like there's always some Polish punks cooking food. And I used to hang out there a lot, and the Ocean played there a lot. We played a lot of squat shows in the early days, and we were always the odd band that played with a bunch of hardcore and punk rock bands, but we brought out lights and like floor lights, you know, just cheap park cans.
Oh yeah.
The punk bands were laughing at us, but in the end it made the music a lot more just atmospheric and moody, and somehow it worked out really well. And yeah, we played a lot of squat shows, but they've mostly been they've mostly fallen victim to, you know, real estate development in Berlin, and have been suppressed and just like pushed out of the inner cities. And there's still a couple in Friedrichshain left, but not nearly as much anymore as around the turn of the millennium. So this culture is kind of just, unfortunately, just in the process of disappearing. But yeah, it's been very important to have that growing up as a band, because at least you would always get a place to crash, you would always get fed, and there was always people, there was always a good crowd, and you know, not the people that buy a ticket because they want to specifically see a band, but just because they're part of that community and they come out anyway. So even small bands that nobody knew would always have some sort of a crowd, and that was really nice to for a band that was starting up, you know, to have these type of places to play.
That's awesome that you have that foundation too, that like you grew up with the DIY punk and hardcore ethics. So I think that that's important to have that foundation, whether or not you stay in that genre. Obviously you guys have kind of progressed and your music is so well rounded and so out there. But you guys still have you have that foundation of like the importance of community, the importance of like DIY ethics. That's kind of awesome to hear, dude.
Absolutely, and I think that has helped us a lot growing, you know, as the band was growing, because it's just this mindset that you need to take care of things on your own, you know, not rely on a booking agent or a label to do things for you, but actually go out there and do it yourself. That's what we've done in the early days, because there was no one else doing it for us, and I think just this spirit has really helped us get out of the mud, because a lot of bands these days, also like speaking from the perspective of a label owner, we get that a lot, that these younger bands, you know, they're just expecting a label to do all the work for them, and it's not like that. You need to go out there and book tours and make things happen for yourself. Of course we can promote the record and push it from our end, and it's important to build a good team there. But what's most important is the band actually has this kind of like DIY mentality, this DIY spirit, that they want something and have certain ideas and goals, and that they somehow know at least how to go about doing them. And that's something we learned in the punk and hardcore scene, and I'm very thankful for that. And I think that was a great experience.
That's awesome, man. I'm stoked to hear that. So I want to pivot a little bit to, you know, with the album coming out, obviously no one can tell the future, but on the idea of attending and you know, touring and stuff, if you were to guess, when do you think we might be able to see things resume as far as some sort of semblance of normalcy? Do you think that, 2021, do you have any idea, or are you kind of just playing it as it goes?
Well, to be honest, we have a full-fledged tour booked starting January 7th that goes way into February. And obviously right now nobody knows if that will go ahead as plans, but we're positive and we're crossing our fingers. There's talks about shows happening in Europe again in the fall. And we've already had a couple of small-scale shows. I think Leprous played a show in Norway recently.
Awesome.
And Destruction played that weird gig in Switzerland where with lots of space between people. Obviously, that's not the experience you want a live show to be, but I'm fairly hopeful that by the end of the year or early 2021, things will be possible again. And we've booked this tour and we're planning on and counting on being able to do that. And if not, well, then, you know, it happens. We just have to play it by ear and see when we can do it. But we're itching to get out again. And it's obviously a very weird year for everyone, ourselves included. And we're going to release this record at a time when people will still be sitting bored at home.
And need music,
Generally not the worst time to release a record. You know, I think you get more attention than usual just because, people are at home and everybody's hungry for music. And so we decided to do it in the end. Of course, there was lots of controversial talk within the band and within our team. And some opinions were going in the direction that we should better wait and release the record next year. But in the end, we were just like, the record's done now. We just want to have it out. And, you know, people are, like I said, are hungry for music. So let's just give it to them. And although we won't be able to tour on it instantly when the record comes out, that is weird. But there's other things you can do to raise attention to it. And I also want people to absorb this record fully before we actually go out and tour with it. I don't like to release a record and then tour already like 2 weeks afterwards when people are just barely familiar with the material. I think it's a pretty tough record to digest, and that takes time. So I think releasing in September and then going out in January, February is right, because that will give people a bit of time to fully digest the record.
Cool, man. Well, it's good that you kind of brought up that people will be sitting waiting for something to digest, and that's specifically, I think, a good thing for your type of band, like The Ocean specifically. With you guys are a kind of band that it's good to sit and digest it all and take it all in. You guys aren't just like throw a single out there and digest the single by itself. Like, I've always kind of digested the albums as holes, Ocean Records. So I think that that's a good thing. If you know, maybe you're home from work and you can't get back to work and something, we can all just kind of chill, listen to this record, and take it all in as a whole.
Exactly. Spend some time with it.
I like that. So I just have a couple, one more final question for you, man. And this is one that's going to get you thinking. But if you could pick a scar on your body and tell us the story of how you got it, Robin.
I have a pretty big but mostly hidden scar on my left arm that is from a jellyfish encounter in the ocean. And it's covered because my arm is covered in ink, and so you cannot really see it in every light anymore. But if you look closely, you can still feel it under the skin.
Oh wow!
It's when I was a boy, I swam into a field of jellyfish stingers in the sea here. That was actually the same place where I'm at right now in Spain.
Brutal.
And I was panicking massively. I was with my dad, and I think I was close to drowning because it was like close to sunset, and I was like terrified because there was this stinging pain in the black water, and it was like, what is this? And then I kind of lost conscience, and I was underwater. My dad actually pulled me back up and punched me in the face.
Woke you up.
I was crying like a baby, and then we returned to the shore, and I had like all these marks all over my body. It must have been like 20 or something. Holy. And they were really like red and itching, and we neutralized them with vinegar. And it was fine. It wasn't life threatening. The scarier part was that I was panicking, and I kind of like, you know, got underwater. That was the really scary part. Yeah. And then I still had these scars, and like even half a year later, my arm was like covered with them. But most of them went away. It just took a long time, but there's still like this one spot where you can still see this like long tentacle.
That's super gnarly. Wow. Damn, dude. The ocean the ocean got back at you, man. Wow. That's pretty gnarly.
Exactly.
Right on, man. Well, Robin, thanks so much for taking the time. Do you have any final words for the Northwest audience here?
Oh, you're in the Northwest, actually. I wasn't even aware.
Yeah, we're in Seattle, yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, I wasn't aware where you're from, actually. We're very much looking forward to getting back to that beautiful part of the U.S. It's been way too long. Mm-hmm. I think our last stateside tour was in 2014.
Yeah.
And then we just did like a couple of West Coast shows, actually, in 2016, but those were pretty and like booked very late. So we haven't done a proper US tour in a long time. And we were supposed to do that this August, actually, but it got canceled for all these reasons.
Yep.
And we're itching to get back there. We love touring America. It's always been a great experience. And hopefully 2021 will allow us to do that. fingers crossed.
Absolutely, man. Again, the new record is Phanerozoic to Mesozoic Cenozoic. There is the singles and videos out now. You can check them out on YouTube, but September 25th on Metal Blade Records. Pre-order the record. It's got some really cool packages and cool merch and whatnot. But, dude, thank you so much for taking the time to do the interview. And stay safe out there. Stay positive. And it sounds like you got some cool shit coming up, man.
Excellent, man. Thanks for your time.
Yep. Have a good one, dude. Thank you.
You too. Bye.
This has been Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.